Following Up is our new Without Borders podcast series, where we explore the world of media through the eyes of journalists. Join us as we deep dive into journalists' careers, uncover their daily working lives, the priorities and challenges they're facing, and how they're adapting to today's changing media landscape. Each episode, the media specialists at Taito are putting journalists in the hot seat and delving into the topics and stories that they really care about and getting the inside scoop on best practice for media relations.
Hello and welcome to the sixth episode of Following Up. In this series, we interview some of Europe's most respected journalists to get to know them better and understand the vision of the media industry. In today's episode, we're joined by Eva Schram, financial markets reporter at Financiële Dagblad, the Dutch equivalent of the Financial Times, and leading business newspaper in the Netherlands. She's based in Amsterdam, but has recently returned from California, where she was Silicon Valley correspondent covering the tech sector from the very heart of it for over 7 years. We're looking forward to finding out more about how she works in today's episode. I'm Eric, and a senior partner at Taito, and I'm joined today by Bastian, one of our media relations experts and associate director at Taito. Welcome to the Following Up podcast, Eva.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome. So in your current role at the Financiële Dagblad, or FD, as we say in the Netherlands, can you say a bit more about the publication itself and how does a typical workday look like for you?
Well, so the publication itself is a financial business newspaper. So we focus on financial business news, economical news, and I'm on the financial markets team. So we specifically look at public companies and the financial markets. And a typical day, man, it differs. The newspaper is very, it's a very dynamic work environment. But generally, so we wait for the markets to open with the markets team before we have our daily meeting, because we want to know what's going to, what the day is starting like on the markets. And then we have our daily briefing, basically. We discuss today's the paper that we just had, the day ahead. What's happening on the markets? Is there anything we need to cover now? Are there more longer term projects we want to look into, or longer term stories, which can range from like a 3-day project to a 3-week thing? That's more rare. But so and then after our meeting, we generally go and find our sources. Either you read some reports or find someone to call to ask questions about a topic you're covering that day. And then by the end of the afternoon, you try to have your story ready so it can go to editing. And the paper has enough time to actually, print it.
Right. So your previous role was in Silicon Valley, as mentioned, as a correspondent. How different is that to your current role?
It's quite different because I obviously was there, by myself, work-wise. So we're in Amsterdam. I work with a team every day. We have about 8 people in the financial markets team, nine, I think, actually. And over there, I was by myself. So it was much more, I was figuring things out. Of course, I talked to people at the paper. There was also the time difference to keep in mind. That was quite different. And then more on the content side, obviously tech and financial markets have some overlap, but they're quite different in what kind of content you write about it.
Yeah, that's understandable. However, I do think that both the tech scene and the financial market sector are both very dynamic. How do you prioritize what story to cover?
Well, there's always that's a good question, because it kind of goes to the heart of what news really is, right? And that's a hard question without a very clear answer. So sometimes it's obvious what the news of the day is and you want to cover that day. If a company, like right now, if a public company announces that they are expecting a lot less profit than they anticipated and the markets react, that's a story we'd want to cover that day because it came out that day. Sometimes, though, it's not as clear because you could publish something tomorrow or you could publish something next week. And it kind of depends on how fast you can get the story together. For one thing that both when I was covering tech and now that I cover the financial markets, I think we really look at is how can we really use our own expertise and our own angle to inform our readers in a specific way. So how can we set ourselves apart from other newspapers or other media? A great example, I think, is, and this wasn't me, this was a colleague of mine, but the Ajax story that was happening this week, which is a Dutch soccer club for people who don't know, Ajax is the Amsterdam soccer club, and their new CEO had bought, they're not doing very well this year. and the new CEO had bought stock in the company, because it's a public company as well, a week before it was announced he was going to be the new CEO. Obviously, that can be considered insider trading. There was a whole thing about it. All media were on it all week. But I think we actually covered it pretty well. We found one of the best experts in the country on what insider trading is and isn't. And he actually explained, it's not as clear cut in this case, because at a soccer club, it matters a lot less who the CEO is than who the new goalie is, you know? So a topic like that we still cover, but we find our own approach to it, I'd say.
You just mentioned the FT, the print version of the FT. How do you prioritize, I'm wondering? Is it is print still more important for you than online?
So we are digital first as a paper. So anything we publish goes online, and then we make a selection of what's online, or I don't. Like, there's a specific team who creates the paper out of what we've already published. Of course, it's like the paper, we print the paper 6 days a week. It's an important part of what we do. And especially the Saturday newspaper too, like any newspaper, that's a bigger read. There's more that goes into it. But then generally we don't hold off on publishing something until it can get into the paper. We publish online as soon as we can.
I see. Yeah, that sounds like the typical approach nowadays, right?
Yeah.
And from your perspective, what makes a company or spokesperson compelling to feature in your articles? Is there other criteria that stand out?
Honestly, I want to talk to people who know a lot more than I do about the topic I'm covering. So who can tell me everything I want to, there's to know about it. And so I think that's an important one, expertise. Accessibility is important. I find, unfortunately, that people are less and less accessible. It's harder to reach people sometimes. So that, having phone, and then this is funny because I think journalists still really like calling people, whereas in the rest of society, that's becoming less of a norm, right? Email and chat is everything. But for us, it's just for any journalist I know, it's easiest if you can just find a phone number, call them and say, hey, I have a question. Would you mind chatting for a bit? And of course, if you're in the middle of something, we can call back later. But just a conversation like we're having now is the best way we feel to get that information and be able to write it properly. And that, so accessibility, expertise, and then ideally that expertise that you have, being able to explain it in a very low-key manner. So not too much jargon or difficult words. And within financial markets, obviously, our readers know more about financial markets than readers of other newspapers. That's why they read ours. But still, we're trying to keep it as low-key as possible, to accessible as possible. So if you can explain something as you would explain it to your neighbors or to your parents, that's the best way.
Excellent, thank you. And do you still want to receive phone calls from PR professionals? What's your take on it?
Well, that's a good. I prefer emails, and then I'll call if I want to. I know that's a little hypocritical of me, but we get a lot of pitches and ideas from people in PR and communications. So I wouldn't get around to working if everyone always called me to check if they could pitch something. So email is the best approach, but you still want to stand out. Since we get so much, you probably want to stand out. And if you're as a PR person, if you have companies or people or topics that you cover that are always going to be interesting to us, of course we can meet up sometime and have a coffee. And then at least we have a closer personal relationship already than if I just have to fish your press release out of the hundreds we get. So there's a personal approach for sure, if it makes sense to what I'm covering, but I wouldn't want to get 20 phone calls a day with pitches from PR. I wouldn't pick up, to be honest.
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah. And you just mentioned that you get hundreds of emails each day or each week. How do you filter the right information out of your inbox? I think that can be tricky some days.
Yeah. So when I say hundreds, that's as a newspaper. I personally don't get hundreds. I get less, but enough to keep me busy. So yeah, I immediately see if it has anything to do with financial markets. If it's not a public company or it's not like market related, I'm not, unless I think, oh, this might be really interesting for a colleague of mine, I might forward it. But even if I'm like, eh, I don't know, I'm just gonna delete it. I'm not great at email management, I'll say. I get behind a lot. So I overlook things too. But if it is market related, I just see if it's something I would cover or a colleague, because I within the financial markets, I do have my own beat, you know. And then the question goes back to, is it news? Is it something I could, is it news to our readers? Is it news to me? Is it something I'm specifically qualified to handle? So that's kind of how I make my selections.
So you check subject lines, I guess.
Yeah, subject lines are first. So that it needs to be, mm-hmm. like we write headlines, attractive and short and still insightful. So that is a difficult task, I'll say, for journalists and for anyone sending press releases. And then like the first two paragraphs are important too, because if by the first two paragraphs, I don't know what you're trying to tell me, then I'm probably not going to read on.
And you just said that you exclusively look on public companies. Is it public companies in the Netherlands or worldwide, or do you have specific markets you look into? How are you structured?
We have an extra, we have like a specific outlook on Dutch markets for sure. So Dutch public companies we cover extensively. We'll also look at European companies and American companies. I mean, Nvidia is a story you can't really not write about right now. So the Dutch have our primary focus, but we'll look at European companies too. It's always more interesting if that European company has, for instance, a Dutch CEO but like major European banks, major European companies, of course, will follow as well. And then, so I follow small caps, smaller companies. If there's something that's like, think of it from the reader's perspective, right? If there's a Dutch angle, if there's an angle that makes sense to our Dutch readers, it could be still very, if there's an Italian company trying to buy a Dutch company, of course, it'll be interesting to us.
Especially with your background as a Silicon Valley correspondent, I guess it's really hard to resist the urge to look into American companies. Is this true?
Yeah, well, yeah, I definitely still keep up on some of them, not at all, but, and then again, also for public markets, the major American tech players are an important part of that. So of course, sometimes it comes up and it's interesting and it makes, you know, what's happening with Tesla or Nvidia or Alphabet or Meta, that's important to what happens here too. The smaller startups and venture capital, what I used to cover a lot too, that I've kind of, I mean, I'm interested, excuse me, I'm still interested in it, but I wouldn't write about it as much anymore.
And everyone has an idea about how journalism works, and even PR professionals and their clients often have misconceptions. What is the one thing you would like them to know about journalism, like even PR people?
That we're also just humans who make mistakes, and we try really hard not to, but sometimes it happens. And then second, I think that we have a pretty good system of how we make a paper and how we get publish our articles. There's journalistic ethics we abide by, but at the same time, sometimes you just have to get something done, right? You have to, it's not always as pre-planned. For an example, I really don't know what's going to be in a newspaper 2 months from now or next month, you know? So we don't plan ahead that far, is what I'm trying to say, because we do want to stay with the news. We can't plan ahead 2 months because what if, well, we can, and then we might have to throw things out the window because something else happens and it's all of a sudden it's not that newsworthy anymore. So I think that's it. Again, we come back to the dynamic nature of it, that we can't, if you approach us 2 months in the head, I can't promise you something's going to be published because I just don't know yet. On the other hand, if you have this big news story or a big interview, someone we really want to talk to, and you come to us 2 days in advance, that is also going to be hard maybe to get into the paper because we do plan ahead a little bit. So if you have something you think, oh, that'd be cool if that could really have some space and, you know, a long conversation and 2 pages in the paper, we'll need a little bit of time, lead time for that. So
in general, how helpful are events for you as a journalist?
I'd say they definitely can be helpful. And especially back in California, I used to go to quite a bit of events, especially in the beginning, because it does provide you with just a lot of contacts and knowledge and ideas. It doesn't always mean that an event is immediately gonna lead to a story, right? It's more, I hate the term, but it's more networking oriented. I do it less now. I don't know why, really, because it could still be very helpful. I just don't get around to it, I guess. But so they could definitely be helpful more for the networking aspect than for a direct story, I'd say.
Are there events that you visit every year or try to visit every year?
No, not. So back in California, I used to go to Y Combinator Demo Day every year. And I think that was the one I really did every year. And then there was the Dutch consulate there often had events and meetings where Dutch startups or Dutch investors would meet each other. And that would always be helpful. But right now, it's not like I have a set thing I go to every year, except, of course, the general meetings for public traded companies. So every reporter at our newspaper follow certain companies specifically, and they have annual meetings, so we do attend those.
Back to a PR question: what was the smartest way a PR expert has ever approached you? Perhaps is there something that other PR people can learn from it?
Wow, I can't think of a specific example, but if you can give me a good interview or news someone no one else had that is really interesting for us, that I'm always going to listen to what you have to say. So I'm trying to think of an example. But so if you have, and it's a little bit more difficult with public companies, because if a public company has information that the market needs to know, they need to tell the market. They can't, it's hard for them to just tell me a few weeks in advance. They can maybe tell me a day in advance so I can get ready. But that kind of approach is always helpful and appreciated. But oh man, I'm trying to think if I can think of anything specific, but it's hard. Nothing stands out specifically. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Maybe another question then. What was the biggest or most interesting story you've ever worked on?
I've worked on plenty of interesting stories. So I used to do some investigative journalism as well. I do that less now, but that's always pretty fulfilling when you do find your own, like if you really uncover something that wasn't being followed very well at first. And people in communications can still be very helpful in that regard too, because you always want to make sure that whoever you're writing about has enough say in the story as well, right? Like where it can say how they view things. I interviewed Bill Gates a long time ago. That was pretty cool. Oh, he only had 7 minutes. And I wanted to call the story 7 minutes with Bill Gates, but I wasn't allowed to. That was for a magazine I used to work at, though. That's years ago. Let me think if it was sort of... It all blends together at some point, so I always have to like really think of stories that I really... Oh, man. Well, last year I did some stories on the Dutch Stock Exchange wanting to delist certain companies because of a whole situation that we don't have to get into, but had to do with their annual reports. And that was something I've kept following up on. So that was pretty cool because we were the ones really breaking that story. So that was pretty cool. Oh, man. I generally like doing interviews. It's always great to have, you know, a person in power or a person who knows so much about a certain topic and really have a long conversation with them and having being able to print that and have our readers share in their knowledge. I think that's really cool. So
why was your interview with Bill Gates only 7 minutes long?
That's all the time he had. Like his schedule, he was in the Netherlands for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And his magazine I worked at the time also was in international development. So they had some relationships with the Gates Foundation in that sense. So he was in town for something, for an event. And in between that event and him going somewhere else, he had 7 minutes to talk to me. So
you still get a story out of it. That's impressive.
Yeah. I'm sure it's online somewhere. I'll have to. And this was just before I was going to move to Silicon Valley. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to ask some questions about Silicon Valley and then, you know, get my start as a Silicon Valley reporter that way. And all he really wanted to talk about was the Gates Foundation. So that was kind of funny, but.
That's good. I'm quite curious to see what was the result of these 7 minutes with Bill Gates. We'll get back to that on a later point. But of course, from a client perspective, we do get requests every now and then to get interviews from international execs coming over to the Netherlands for a couple of days for events or something like that. But sometimes those people lack the view of the local market, of course. What's your opinion about that? Is it still interesting for you then, or you really need this Dutch view on the situation?
No, it doesn't. They don't need to necessarily know exactly what the Dutch context is, but there needs to be like some sort of correlation between whatever they do and the Dutch situation. So if it's a very well-known company, like an American or a European company that we cover here as well, it doesn't really matter. It's not less important if they're also a big Dutch office, for instance. Often they would have a big Dutch office, so there's already that connection. But if they do something in the semiconductor industry, for instance, which is a huge sector in the Netherlands, then that there's already that connection, right? There's already a reason why it's relevant to our readers, because semiconductors are a big part of our, we have a big semiconductor industry and they're publicly traded as well. So for that would be like TSMC is a very well-known company, of course, but if they're a smaller semiconductor company is visiting and they have something to say about that's relevant to what's happening in the Dutch semiconductor system, industry, then that could still be interesting.
Okay, that's good to know. So to finish off, two last questions, I think. The first one is which particular figure from the tech world or the financial world is on your wish list? The next Bill Gates, I would say. And what is the topic you never want to hear about anymore?
Those are two excellent questions. I would say I'm debating, but I'd still say if someone offered me to talk to Elon Musk, I would say yes, because while I think he has some issues, he's also very clearly very accomplished and has interesting ideas. He's been off and on, so I would definitely say yes if someone offered me an interview with Elon Musk. And the same with
would you be comfortable doing that interview live
with Elon Musk? Sure, yeah. I think you never know what's going to happen with him, I guess, but still that could be interesting. Yeah. That said, And then the same goes for many of those high power tech people. I would talk to Zuckerberg, even though I don't think he ever would talk to a Dutch journalist, but you know, he's not that interested in talking to the press, and he doesn't need to, because Facebook or Meta gets enough attention as is. In financial, in the markets, there are plenty of people, and sometimes I just don't know yet. One thing I try to really focus on is trying to speak to a lot of female people, just women working in finance, in markets, because they are there for sure, but it's they aren't as visible and well represented. So I'm always trying to get that representation into our paper. If I can, I'd like to speak to a female expert instead of a male expert, not because I think a male expert can't be interesting. Of course they can. And I will, I talk to men all the time, but I really want to kind of give a little extra to speak to women and give them some visibility in our paper.
That's good. That's good to know.
And what, the topic I never want to hear about again. Yeah. Well, I'm getting a little AI tired at the moment, to be honest, which I totally get why everyone's on it. And I'm not saying that AI isn't important and isn't going to, you know, really change the way we work and really change our society in profound ways, like the internet did before it and like mobile did before it. However, we're not quite where people think we are yet, I think. So the anxiety about what AI can't, there's reason to be cautious and to really think about how these innovations, the unintended consequence of what AI can do. But at the same time, AI is really not at the level yet I think people believe it is at. That's probably might be a controversial statement, we'll see. But yeah, so and that for me leads to being a little tired of AI. Like when I first got to Silicon Valley, everything was about the blockchain. Blockchain, blockchain, blockchain. And at some point I was just like, God, I can't hear about the blockchain anymore. I just don't care anymore, even though it is an important innovation. It's the same thing. When I first moved to Silicon Valley, that was 2016. Everyone kept saying, well, in like 10 years, or actually, because I have a little brother who was 10 at the time, he's turning 18 now. And everyone was like, well, he's never gonna have to learn to drive. Cars will drive themselves by then. Clearly we're not there. He's gonna learn to drive soon. So, you know, we both underestimate and overestimate at the same time what innovation can do, I think. So keep that in mind when you're being overrun by AI stories.
That's some good advice. Thank you. And thank you, Eva, for giving us insight into your world. Very, very interesting. And yes, let me know when you get 7 minutes to talk to Elon Musk. I will definitely...
yes, I will.
Definitely read this article.
Thanks so much.
I hope our listeners enjoyed this conversation with Eva as much as we did. And if you have any feedback on today's episode, contact the Taito team on LinkedIn or X, or a comment on the video episode of this podcast on YouTube. You can also drop us an email at hello@taitopr.com. And you can actually listen to more episodes of this series with journalists from some of Europe's most authoritative publications like The Next Web, Tech Radar Pro, Frankfurt Allgemeine, Euronews, or Handelsblatt. And I want to thank everybody for listening and see you soon.
Following Up is a Without Borders podcast series produced by pan-European B2B tech PR and communications agency, Taito. You can find every interview on YouTube and all major podcast platforms. Subscribe now so you never miss an episode.